Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, today's guest is Howie Spangler, lead vocalist and guitarist for Baltimore, Maryland beach rockers, Ballyhoo. Together we dissect the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan favorite song, Walk Away, taken from their 2011 album, Daydreams. Howie mentioned that he prefers being super prepared when entering a recording studio, but thus was not the case this time. He said that the basic shell and lyrical idea for the song were written, but he was missing a lot of words to tie it all together. So Howie enlisted the help of producer Greg Shields to fill in the blanks and complete the track. Sonically, the recording sounds awesome, but Howie and I both feel that the relatability of the lyrics are what resonates so well with people. The stereo guitars on this track are tight, yet loose in parts, which make them breathe and feel real. Oh, and I guess I impressed Howie with my guitar string changing skills a few years back, but I'll let him tell you all about that. So for all this and a whole lot more, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Howie, how's it going?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I feel like I kind of just saw you. We were on the 311 cruise together, and that was just an absolute blast. Had you guys ever done that before?
Yeah, we've done it. That was number four for us.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. That was number two for us. We hadn't done it since 2013, and what a cool thing that those guys have cultivated. Most of the people that I talked to were return cruisers. It's like a thing that they want to do. And it's incredible to the listeners out there to be able to get on a cruise ship and to play music. It's ridiculous. It's like those things that we never thought would come true, but they have.
It's so true, man. 311 is a cult. Like 311 yeah. Nation, they're all their fans. Like first time we played with those guys in 2008, like we were just accepted immediately. And that was great for me and my brother, especially because we're huge 311 fans. And, we've come back and done a lot of things with those guys, and they have like what I think every band would love to have is that community that is just diehard and super engaged and just will do anything for those guys. And I think every band should strive for that.
Absolutely. We feel the same way. We were accepted with open arms out there. And, you know, we're probably one of the faster tempo bands on the ship. You know, there's a lot of reggae and maybe slower rock bands. And as you said, we were just open arms accepted. And the fan mail we've gotten from that has been absolutely fantastic. And those guys kind of have the best of everything. They have, as you said, this cult following. They still get played now on classic radio, but they kind of have their anonymity. You know, everyone besides Nick could probably go to the mall and not get recognized with their kids, which is great.
Yeah, that's got to be the best thing. You guys are always so much fun. And oh my God, it was so funny. The night that you guys played on the pool deck, you were something that night. It was something in the air that night for you. And you, oh my God, I felt like whenever I go see my friends' bands play, I'm sort of like just open season on me. Cause I guess I'm like the tallest dude in the room, the blonde hair, whatever. And you can just see me from the stage wherever I stand. And you, oh my God, this lady was talking to me and she was all up in my ear. And you know, it happens. And I get it. And I'm being cool. But you just straight up yelled at her from the stage. It was the best. It was so fucking funny.
Yeah. And I
forgot. Artists don't want to be bothered.
I basically said over the PA, and it came out wrong, as most of the stuff out of my mouth does. What I said was, hey, to the woman who's bothering Howie out there, and everyone's now looking at you, there's a spotlight on you.
I'm just like,
and
oh.
I said, you don't realize, like, we don't want to talk to you when we're watching another band. Like, you're in my ear screaming, stop talking to him. And it was just part of the show and a joke. But what she took that and other fans on the cruise, I was at the casino later that night and they're like, so you don't like when we come up and say hi to you? I'm like, no, I didn't say that. But yeah, you stuck out like a sore thumb. You're what, like 6'5"?
6'6", yeah.
Jeez. But speaking of longevity, you guys, you and your brother started this band in 1995.
Yeah.
Which you had to have just been kids. I know you're younger than me. So what inspired you guys to say, hey, we're gonna start a band? He got a drum set, you got a guitar one Christmas, and there you go.
Motley Crue, dude. And Rat and Poison and Tesla and Def Leppard and all those bands in the 80s, man. Like my dad was in some bands when he was coming up. And I remember the last like band he was in, I was probably like 3-4 years old. He had a drum kit in the basement. There was some sound gear there that he had, like some old console mixer or something. But I went to one or two of his practices with his buddies, and they're sitting there smoking weed and drinking beers and stuff. It was the 80s. It was a different time. And just being in that situation with those guys, like kind of sitting back and watching them just sort of work it out, like I said, drinking beers and stuff and just kind of having a good time. It was like, I don't know, that really stuck with me. And then my dad always had like a gear around, drums, microphones, whatever, you know, we had little Casio keyboards and always musical instruments around. He was always putting that on us. And I took to it. I didn't learn how to play until I was a teenager, but this, you know, I'm like 6, 7, 8 years old. And he took us to see Rat and Poison in 87. So I was 6 years old. My brother was 4.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And we saw him in the DC Capitol Center, and it blew my mind, dude. It was like watching this band that I'd seen on MTV, like only seen on MTV and heard on the radio, and I got their tapes and stuff. And it was like insanity. It was like 10,000 people there or whatever that arena holds. And it felt like it. And I have the picture right here in front of me, sort of as inspiration, but it's me and my brother and my dad. And where we were in our seats looking down at Rat, and we're taking a picture. We had our Rat t-shirts on, and we're these little kids, and it just stuck with me, man. I was like, one day I'm going to be in a band and I'm going to do this. This looks amazing.
That's so cool. And not to diminish your story in any way, but how many kids thought that though? You know, how many kids wanted that I've met tons of them. You met tons of musicians that just could never really make it happen. And how did it happen with you? Did you have just a better voice than your brother, or that's how you became the singer, or how'd that work out?
By the time that I actually started playing guitar and like really thinking about starting a band, I was really into Green Day. Like, still am. I'm a huge, huge Green Day fan. Billy Joe Armstrong was like the guy for me. You know, I was like, well, he plays guitar and he sings, so I'm going to get a Fender Stratocaster and I'm going to put on a tie and I'm going to do that and do my best Billy Joe Armstrong impression. And my brother was, we had like some, like I had my fourth grade snare drum and like still, and we had like a Folgers can with like change in it as like a hi-hat.
Yeah.
And we took one of my mom's pots and pans, like the top, the lid, and we hung it from a bird cage holder, had a hook like this.
That was your symbol.
As our crash symbol. Every time you hit it, it falls off. We had a Sega Genesis, the box from the Sega Genesis, as like our kick drum, and he would just hit it with the stick because we didn't have like a pedal yet.
Yeah.
Oh man, it was, and we just started jamming in the basement. I saved up babysitting money when I was like 13 or 14 to buy my first amp. It was a little crate. It was like $80. And then just from that point, man, it was just like all in. And we practiced every single day for like 8 months.
You guys were like the human version of the Muppets.
Yeah.
Your gear there.
It was madness. It was madness.
I was going to ask, you know, how did you get from Motley Crue to being a rock reggae island feel type of band in Baltimore of all places? And you kind of told me that it sounds like Green Day was the gap there. And but how did you get into this style, and what drew you to that? Was it 311? Was it Sublime?
I remember hearing like Bob Marley stuff on the radio here and there. That was definitely by far the most popular reggae artist at the time. And I didn't really get into it. And I remember like Adam Sandler made a reggae song that sounded like a Bob Marley song for that one piece of shit car, you know. And I remember thinking that was fun and cool. Probably the only reggae song I liked at the time.
It's a piece of shit car. Sashiko.
You gotta be Sashiko.
He sucks royal dick.
Then fucking polish it.
What are you missing, crap?
Never gets him very far.
Oh, fuck you, car. He's
got no secret. But when Goldfinger came out with Here in Your Bedroom, that first record, dude, Here in Your Bedroom was all over the radio at that point in 96. And it was just like, whoa, what is this? Like, okay, so I can do like Green Day stuff, but I can also like mix in like ska and reggae. And like, I liked how they packaged it.
When I wake up tomorrow, would you still feel the same? When I wake up tomorrow, would you have changed? Because I still feel the same.
And I was like, I want to do it like that. And then like a few months later is when I found Sublime. I went down the Sublime rabbit hole after that. Brad was already gone by this point, but I started finding like on the Sublime archive, like all the old like demos and like weird stuff that have all been repackaged, just like Everything Under the Sun these days and the box sets and stuff. And I just fell in love with all that. I just love the rawness of it. I loved how Brad could just like go and like make up shit on the spot. I'm still not good at that, but I don't know. It just felt real. It wasn't forced. And I was like, okay, I love this type of shit. And I'm gonna start making my own. So we were like a pop punk thing, like a rock thing. And then about a year into the band is when I found all that stuff and started mixing in the reggae and the ska and stuff.
I always felt that the reggae, the whole culture is very, very reminiscent of what like the Grateful Dead and Fish and some of those bands had. You use the term cult following, but it's massive. There's bands that are coming up within this scene, even in the last 10 years. It's like, you know, on a Monday, I will have heard of Iration, and by Thursday, they're playing Red Rocks. It's like, what is going on? And it's the fans. It really is the fans that come out to these shows. They come out in droves, and it reminds me, again, a lot like those bands, the Dead, that didn't have radio hits but could go fill arenas and stadiums.
I think that's part of the appeal, is that they're not on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to be on the radio. That was like my goal as a kid, to be on the radio, be on MTV, play SNL, like all the things, you know, the big dreams. Nowadays that stuff has changed, but I think the appeal is that they're not on the radio, and it's like there's like this whole under the radar scene that's happening. And you know, you say you've heard Iration, now they're playing Red Rocks. I mean, that obviously you know this, that like it takes, you know, we see all that, but then you don't hear about the 10, 15 years before that, right? But about all the work. And, you know, this whole scene has been growing like crazy the last few years especially. But I remember back in like the infancy of it, you know, this is like post-Sublime, like I'd say 8 to 10 years after Brad dies, you start seeing like Slightly Stupid's coming to town. And I'm like, I remember calling HFS, the radio station here that used to be this big alt station.
Yeah,
here
in DC.
Awesome station at the time. And calling, hey, can you play Slightly Stupid? They're playing at Record Theater. Like, who's that? What are you talking about? You know? And nowadays, it's like Stupid's like packing out amphitheaters every summer. And Revolution, Stick Figure, Iration, you know? And at the time, it was like Pepper, Expendables, I remember the Supervillains, you know, those bands, and Slightly Stupid were kind of like the core. And then it just, after like 2009, 2010, it just started, you start seeing bands everywhere.
Yeah. And I wasn't singling out Iration. Yeah. They've put their time in. I'm just saying it seems like to someone that's not, you know, directly in the scene, going to all the shows, like you blink your eyes and these bands have gotten huge. To your point, you know, I look back when I first heard Sublime and started like looking at the people that were into that culture, 311, I thought it was huge back then. It is 10 times as big as it was back then, maybe even more, you know, to your point. These bands have been out there working it. And I think it's kind of like the punk thing a little bit, where like these are my bands. They're not on the radio. This is still our scene, even though there's 10,000 people of us packed out in an amphitheater.
Exactly.
That's really cool. You guys released your debut album, 365 Day Weekend. Love that title.
Thanks.
In 2000. And then your fourth album, Daydreams, came out in 2011 on Pepper's label, Law Records. And we're going to talk about Walk Away today. And I've heard you guys play this this song a ton. And, you know, as you know, Howie, when Chris and I, my partner, are researching these for episodes, we do a number of things. We'll ask the artists, and a lot of times we just know what the biggest song was. It was a huge radio hit or something. And, you know, we'll look at Spotify and different things. And this song just, it just kept popping out at us. It's a really big song for you guys. Do you remember writing Walk Away?
Yeah. I remember I was driving around, I think it was like winter of 2010 or so, and I was just driving somewhere, maybe to band practice or something, and this line came in my head. As you know, it's just lines randomly pop in your head, and you're like, oh, I need a voice memo, I need something, you know? and I'm driving, and it was, girl, we just can't take much more, you know, we make each other miserable. It was that one line hit me. I was like, okay, there's something here. This is very, I don't know, the line feels very, it's like visceral. I feel like it, a lot of people can connect to that. And then obviously melodically, it stuck with me. It was one of those things that I didn't have to remember. It would just stay there, you know, yeah. In an earworm. I was like, okay, I need to build something off of that. And I think I started like messing around with like a chorus or something soon after that. I didn't have like the song wasn't fully written when we went to record it. It was, I want to say we did what would become the sessions for Daydreams, like March of 2011. We recorded the full album in like 2 weeks because we were touring. We were doing like 200 shows a year at that point.
Yeah. Weren't you on the Warped Tour in 2011?
2012.
2012. Okay. We were on an 11, so okay. You were on the next year. I remember you being out there on the circuit during that time, and that takes up all your summer, just that tour alone, and I knew you guys were doing tons of stuff outside of that. The record was recorded at Sound Lounge Studios in Orlando, produced by Greg from Cashed Out, Greg Shields, and Mike Steeb. Is that how you pronounce?
Steeby, yeah.
Mike Steeby. And when you presented the song in the studio, you said that it wasn't fully written. Had the guys in the band heard a demo? Did you have a demo of the song?
We may have, like, run through it, like, just on arrangement before that. But I remember that session, like I said, it was like 2 weeks, and we went in there with like half a record and a lot of like half songs, you know, and half ideas, pieces of some stuff. And so it felt like kind of a dash. We had to like, all right, we only got 2 weeks and we're back on the road, you know, so we got to make a record here.
Do you like doing that, or do you like going in with everything set in stone?
In a perfect world, everything's done and you just, there's no pressure. Cause I lost my mind. I lose my mind. Like every time we do that, every time we go to a session, I end up like freaking out and having a meltdown at some point. But,
we all do.
Right. I want it to be perfect. You want it to be perfect. You want it to be right.
You try being in a band with Roger. I'll train you. He'll say the same about me.
You guys are maniacs. I love you guys, man. But Greg was great. Like Mike was such a great engineer for at that time. He was like 22 or something. He was a young dude at the time. And he was so fast. We used Logic. And that was the first time I'd used Logic to make a record. I thought, we're not using Pro Tools? Like, hold on a second.
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on here? We're not pro if we're not using Pro Tools. And dude, I mean, this dude was so fast and you wouldn't even know it. You know, it's just, and we've made several records with Logic since then. But he was so fast, which was great. So like, I like to work fast. When I'm in the studio, I like to like, oh, I fucked up. And by the time I say I'm fucked up, we're ready to record again. Like, okay, let's go. I don't like it. Okay, let me reset. No, we're going, which was great. And he was great for that. Greg was great because he's a great lyricist. That guy can like come up with stuff really quickly. And it's contextual and it's like, he's very good at puns. The guy's a punsman. We call him a punsman. To like almost to his detriment. Like we're just like, Jesus Christ, Greg, like go away. Yeah.
Not everything has to be a pun.
Exactly.
We're just going to breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's a pun. But he's always, the wheels are always turning. So I've co-written a lot of songs with him. So Greg like co-wrote a lot of the lyrics with me on Walk Away. I think I had the chorus locked. And then it was the verses that I needed help telling the story, because I really wanted to tell a story about a couple that just, they realized that they just weren't right for each other. And they actually, you know, and they had their moments, like the lyric about, you know, you got your brass knuckles, I got a machete. It's cartoony in my head, but it was also like metaphorical, like we're just going at each other. We're trying to kill each other here. And this, And it comes from the idea of wanting a relationship to end on a good note when you know, like a bad relationship to end on a good note, which is like almost impossible, but it's a fantasy of like, hey, this isn't working for either one of us. Let's just get out of this and not murder each other and just, you know, you go do your thing, I'll go do mine. And that's it. No hard feelings. That's kind of the vibe.
Well, yeah, and that's very difficult, as you said, when things are tumultuous and you're trying to go about it in a civil way. It rarely can happen because once the human emotion gets in the way, you're doomed. The song's 3 minutes and 21 seconds. I want to jump into this bad boy, Howie. It starts with a Florin Ragtime hit, takes us into 8 bars, a drums, bass, and this is interesting. They're essentially stereo guitars, but they're clean and they're panned right and left. That's two performances I'm hearing, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I always do that.
That's awesome. I've never done that. We've always taken one and kind of tossed the guitar, one guitar off to the left, and that's it. Mostly because, you know, we have one guitar player, and that was always the thinking. But I love the play, and we're going to get into that, the interplay between the right and the left guitar. Sometimes they're locked, and sometimes they're kind of moving. And
yes.
And I love that. You find that in a lot of rock and roll. Keith Richards, the Stones had that, Aerosmith had that, Guns N' Roses, where the guitar pan right and pan left. They're locked sometimes, but they're moving and doing different things. I absolutely love that. We also get an organ here at the top, and this is the verse progression that leads us into verse one.
Again, and fist it cuffs just like last week. You got your brass knuckles and I got a machete. Not too long ago we used to cuddle in our sleep. Somehow this shit got turned around and now the words got deep.
So here we are again in fisticuffs just like last week. You got your brass knuckles and I got a machete. Not too long ago we used to cuddle in our sleep. Somehow this shit got turned around. And now the words cut deep. And it's so funny. I've had a lot of people on here. They start giggling when I read their lyrics to them because they've never heard them read at them. And I've only really got absorbed into this the past couple of days, really listening intently. And this almost made me crack up, this third line reading it just now, because the way you sing it, it doesn't come across as what it's saying here. But what else is going on besides the obvious?
Yeah, here we are again in fisticuffs just like last week. So it's like, yeah, all right, well, here we are. We're fighting again, you know? And then you got your brass knuckles, I got my machete. It's like, yeah, we're trying to go at each other. We're trying to take each other's heads off, you know, trying to hurt each other. And it's just it's clearly a toxic relationship. And I think I was going for like, we don't want to do this to each other. You know, we don't want to be bad people to each other, but we're, here we are, for whatever reason, we clash. And yeah, and then it's like, what, we used to cuddle in our sleep. Now the words cut deep. It's like, we have our moments, you know, it's like, oh, these, you know, we're lovey, we're sweet, you know? And then it's like, now we're saying awful things to each other. It just, I was in a pretty toxic relationship in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, about 4 years. About 3 weeks in, we should have broken up, you know, and we stayed mm-hmm. another 4 years, and it was tough. And when you're that young, you know, everything matters. Everything is so huge, and you don't realize that, like, you're going to meet so many people throughout your life. And we were kids, you know, we're 17, 18, 19, 20 years old. It's like, you just don't realize how this doesn't matter. Like the everything you do, it adds up to who you are right at this moment, you know? So I'm glad I went through that, and maybe she would say the same. I don't know.
It's that time and perspective. And I've had people tell me this when I'm going through a breakup or something, you know, in my life that went sideways, and they'll say, hey man, it's just going to take a second, you know? And when you're in the storm, that's the last thing you want to hear. But when you reflect on it years later, it, you know, there's things that were just, I thought it was the worst thing ever in my life. And I look back now and it doesn't even hurt. It's not like there's anything there anymore. But at the time, and the lyrics here reflect that, you know, you, when you're going through that breakup, as you said a minute ago, you want it to be civil and cordial, but how can it be? Because one moment your head's saying, we used to cuddle in our sleep. but wait, but now I have all these words you said to me, and I said to you that it's over here, so you're fighting yourself.
Yeah, it's like, I wanted to present the story in a way as like, where it's not one-sided, like, you know, you're causing all this problems and all this pain. It's like, I'm part of the problem too, you know, I'm acknowledging that. You know, and like with my wife and I, like we've been together for a long time. And like in the beginning, it was, we had some rough spots, you know? So this song isn't based on just like one, that one relationship. It's sort of a, just a lot of relationships that I've had and relationships that other people have had. You know, we all go through the same things. And, you know, so I was just trying to convey that, like, how do I set up a situation that explains, you know, like a toxic relationship and just those words, especially that my favorite line is the one about the brass knuckles and the machete. I just think that's so funny and cartoony, but it's like real, like you get it, you know?
Do you recall if you wrote that or was that something that Greg came up with?
That was definitely me. I think I did the full first verse or maybe most of it, but that line was absolutely me. I have a sick humor, like a dark humor.
Machete's a pretty rough tool. Brass knuckles are too, but a machete's gonna take off limbs.
You gotta sell it, man. You gotta sell it.
Yeah, you got the better end of the bargain there. Pre-chorus one comes right off verse one. Pretty much same instrumentation here. Those clean stereo guitars, drums, bass, and organ are in here.
All the love letters stuffed into a Molotov cocktail.
We get our first harmonies in the song here. And how did that come about? Were you in the studio saying, hey, this is, because again, this song wasn't completely finished. So you're kind of coming up with parts still. Did Greg say, hey, we should throw some harmonies here? Is that something you had in your head?
You know, it was probably, I'm sure Greg thought of it as well. I've always had this like thing for, like, I try to go on vibe. Like, how does it feel? Like, okay, now we need to lift this, you know? And the pre-chorus is sort of like the lift and sort of like when you're winding up and the chorus is supposed to be like, boom, you know, you're building the tension a little bit.
Is that you singing the harmony here?
I sing all the harmonies. I've always done that. We tried to have Scott do it one time on like the second record and it just didn't work. Like, I like how my voice goes together, you know, and I've never made any like, well, I did the backups. I just want it to sound clean and mm-hmm. exact. Like, I want it to match with exactly what I'm doing. You know, that's really all it was.
I sing a lot of harmonies. Roger sings a lot of harmonies to himself. Sometimes your voice just sounds better with itself for certain parts. And there's other stuff, obviously, that he sings with me. But I found that out. I can really harmonize well with myself. And sometimes it just locks up better.
You've got a great range. You know, like, you can hit that higher stuff, too. You know, like, and like Roger is like, obviously he's way up here, you know, I could right. never sing the Science of Selling Yourself Short. I could never sing that song. Like, I'd have to like transpose it way down, you know?
Me too. There was one time Roger lost his voice and JR has a high voice. He had to, thank God he's in the band. We wouldn't have been able to play that song. We couldn't do it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Damn. Yeah. That's a bummer.
Have to sing it an octave down. But the lyric here is all the love letters stuffed into a Molotov cocktail.
Yes, we're selling it. Yeah. We're selling it. This is punk rock, dude.
I love that line. All the love letters stuffed into a Molotov cocktail. Was that something that was done in the studio? You remember that lyric or was that there from the initial idea?
Yeah, that was probably as I started to work on the song, flesh it out. That was probably there when we went in another sort of creative, artsy, dark humor thing. I just love that visual imagery. And I remember when the single came out, I designed the art for it and it was, you know, a Molotov cocktail with a love letter stuffed in it with a little heart on it. It was all on fire. I love the imagery. So like, yeah, I'm just trying to create some cool imagery there for the listener. All the love letters stuffed into a Molotov cocktail. It's like you're using your words against each other and, you know, just,
yeah,
it's madness.
Ooh, I did it again. I made her a mix.
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Howie Spangler coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
And now, back to the show.
Chorus one comes in at the 36-second mark. We're already at the chorus. There's this really cool snare fill that you say sometimes it's easier, the first lyric over that snare fill. And the delivery here, you crammed in a lot of words in this chorus part here. It's really interesting. It's almost got a rapping quality to it a little bit.
Sometimes it's easier to walk away.
Walk away.
Call it what it is. This is hopeless. I can't see it, girl, the life goes on.
Life goes on.
And we've seen better days. And you know this.
Sometimes it's easier to walk away. Call it what it is. This is hopeless. Well, can't you see it, girl, that life goes on? We've seen better days. And you know this. And we get a backing vocal on the first line after Walk Away. It's a pan left, right, and center. There's a backing vocal with harmonies on Walk Away. And also on the line Life Goes On, we get panned left and right and kind of center, some backing vocals there. A 16th note tambourine joins the party here in the chorus. And we get harmonies on the line This Is Hopeless and the last line And You Know This. And if you're wondering why I haven't went any further with what you're probably still considering the chorus, I think the next part is a post-chorus, Howie. Thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've always thought of it as a chorus, but if you were going to break it down, I would absolutely say it feels like a, because you're sort of like, it feels like you're summing it all up.
It does. I love a post-chorus that is done right and feels right. This one is done right and feels right, and that's why I said it. The chord progression changes. It takes you somewhere else, but you're still in the world, and it recaps the lyric at the end, letting go of all this. We'll get to that part in a second, but as far as the chorus comes here, again, that tambourine comes in. This isn't the fastest song. It's kind of mid-tempo. That 16th note, it makes it feel like there's urgency there, and it's faster. I love that.
I love adding things like that, like tempo. I put tempo on like everything these days. It lifts, you know? I write a lot of songs that are like very simple progressions. There's like two, maybe three parts in the whole song, front to back. And so you have to create some dynamic where there otherwise wouldn't be. And I think when you do things like add a tambo halfway through, or a harmony, or add another harmony or something, or something, or a keyboard, something different, it helps lift the song and keep it from getting stagnant and boring. We have songs that are one progression all the way through, like front to back, like the same thing over and over. You just add things, you drop things out, you add things in like at different parts, and it just makes it feel more dynamic. So I love doing that.
You know who's great at that? That band Turnstile.
Turnstile's sick.
They'll play the same three chords for 3 minutes, but they'll have little nuances coming in and out, so it doesn't feel like the same thing. It's really genius, and I've always loved that. I feel like sometimes less is more. Speaking of, you know, Ballyhoo, you guys have some songs that, you know, I won't go as far as to say prog rock or anything, but they have some jam parts and some, you know, a little deeper. This song is pretty straightforward, but I think it's the lyrics here is what's touched your fans and resonated, and why this song is one of your most popular tracks.
I think so too. And it's funny, man, you never know. I'm sure you've heard this a million times, but like, you just never know that when you're in the studio and you're working it out, like, you don't realize you're recording like your biggest song. I just never thought. And I remember thinking, like, why this one? Like, I feel like I have better songs. I feel like I have better, like, it's a good song in my opinion. I think it's a good song for sure. I understand the appeal of it, but I'm like, we have such better songs, I think. And it's just, for whatever reason, man, people just get hooked.
Yeah, and how many times have you recorded a song and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to play this live, and it just falls flat. and there's another song that you're not that stoked about, but you go play it and the place goes berserk, and you're like, why?
Dude.
We still play songs like that. I'm like, why are they going nuts right now? This isn't one of our best songs.
And you'll take it, you know?
But, yeah,
but goddamn.
All day long.
Yeah, man, but it's like... Yeah, you just feel like shit, you know?
and I'm glad you feel the same way about this song. I think the song's awesome. I love this song. I've heard you guys play it a ton. But musically, this is a little more simple than some of the other Ballyhoo stuff. Post-chorus one comes right on the heels of chorus one.
girl, we just can't take much more. You know we make each other miserable. Let's just call it what it is. I'm letting go of all of this.
Girl, we just can't take much more. You know we make each other miserable. Let's just call it what it is, letting go of all of this.
So yeah, at that point, we're changing the way that I'm delivering, you know, because before it's like easier to walk away. And I wanted to do like that walk away part. Like I was like, this needs to be, I want it to be like a barbershop sound. Walk away, you know? And so I wanted the other guy, I think the other guy sang that. I didn't sing that part. The other guys jumped on like as a gang vocal.
That didn't sound like you. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the other guys in a gang vocal style, just huddled around the mic. And I was like, just, and you know, my guys like aren't the best singers, you know, like they're great at what they do, but singing's not their thing, you know. But I was like, you know, so I'm like, do it again, you know. Just wanted it to really fit, but also sound raw and like there's no tuning or anything. It's just a raw kind of feel. I was trying to go for this barbershop thing. So so we go from that into the girl, we just can't take. To me, it was like, is really like lifting the song now. Like we're coming up, we're building some more tension for the end. And then you deliver that last line, let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm letting go of all this. And let's just call it what it is. I actually borrowed from an Incubus song. I love Brandon Boyd. His voice is insane.
He's awesome.
Let's just call it.
My voice is like a combination of Brandon Boyd and Brad Knoll. I tried to mix those two together and just singing like make yourself front to back, like in the car, like blasting, just trying to match every note. And so that one line came from a song on Light Grenades, I think. It was, let's just call it what it is. It's like, I like that. And it just fit the song so well. It was like, we need to call this what it is. This is insanity. This is toxic. And let's just part ways amicably.
Well, you said a ton of things that I was going to mention here. You already said them for me. Thank you. This part has, I wrote, optimistic tension. Optimistic in the music, not so much the lyric, but
yeah.
It's uplifting here, but there is that tension on the first two lines. And again, we have harmonies on all five lines here. On the first two lines, the bass guitar is playing this driving eighth notes. Doom, 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 doom. And there's something about that. It kind of takes over for me what the tambourine was doing in the first half of what we're calling the chorus. Love the bass there. There's great descending chord pattern here as well, and some really great note choices on the harmonies. I love the harmonies here. And then at the very end, we get a cool little snare fill that takes us right back into verse two. But that bass guitar, doom, 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 on those first two lines there, that is, I guess the word again, I'll use it, tension. It's building there.
It's building, it's driving forward, which I love doing that. JR's a great musician. He's a great bass player for the band at the time. He was in the band for about 10 years.
Yeah, JR Gregory played bass on this. And of course, you had Nick in the band since 2014, who's a ripper as well.
Yeah.
So you guys lucked out in the bass department.
Yeah, yeah. And Nick's like super handsome and just very, very photogenic, and the girls love him. So that helps sell records, I guess.
Gotta get him some singing lessons. He needs to be the front man.
You should be doing this. Make some money.
But something I hadn't mentioned here, the bass tone's ripping on this. It sounds great. And the note choices that the JR played on here is fantastic. I think, how involved are you in that? Because you're a producer, okay? So now you're in working with other guys. You've handed the producer's chair over to Greg and to Mike here. How involved are you with that? Are you getting into that? Was he so good he did his own parts and you kind of let him be?
I'm always like very much involved. And I think some of the guys like hate it, you know, at some point. But I have a vision for the song, you know. Now that part specifically, I can't exactly remember if that was me or just JR doing that. It might have been a thing. Donald, my brother, the drummer, he likes to work with the bass player on certain parts of the song. So they're in the pocket together. And sometimes they will come up with something together that fits, you know. And it might have been a point where it was like, JR might have thought, you know, let's do something like, let's kind of build it up here. That may have been his thing. Or maybe Donald changed his pattern at that point and JR was playing to him, because that happens a lot. So yeah, I don't exactly remember that part, but probably one of those two.
Maybe three times in our career I've had to like interject with Roger. He just does his thing. You know, he knows what the song needs. There was something on our last record where he turned around at some point. He was tracking bass. It's a song I wrote. And he's like, I just don't know what to play here, man. What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I'm like, you're kidding me, right? I'm going to all of a sudden for 30 years tell you how to play the bass. But I'll tell you, it's a luxury to have someone in the band like that. It really is. It takes the pressure off, because I'm like you. I like to micromanage everything. And you know, that doesn't always work out so well.
No, it doesn't. You know what? Bad vibes in the studio. You know, it's like, it's like the worst thing.
We're trying to track a reggae record here, guys. Come on. Don't be mad.
Come on.
Don't be angry.
I think we've always been like a rock band first. I always say that we're not like a reggae band, you know, and we approach all of this, you know. You can call it reggae rock. I call it beach rock, like Maryland beach rock. Mm-hmm. I want to own that shit. But all my guys are metalheads, you know, and JR is very eclectic with his stuff. You know, if you're talking about making this record, he was in the band. So he was very eclectic with his music taste and stuff. And we always come from like a more rock, like Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah, you guys are more of a rock band to me for sure. You know, you got the, as you're calling, the beach island vibes, but yeah, it's definitely rock based.
Yeah, 100%.
Post chorus one, mentioned a moment ago, a cool little snare fill takes us right into verse two.
I remember asking all around to get your name, and I was shocked to find out that you were doing the same. Now it seems that those old days have come and gone away, but I would never call this a mistake.
I remember asking all around to get your name, and I was shocked to find out that you were doing the same. Now it seems as those old days have come and gone away, but I would never call this a mistake. The clean guitars here, left and right, are more playful than verse one. There's not as regimented and locked with each other here. I love that.
It's funny because I feel like it's probably a result of me not practicing enough, like the song. So there's certain things that, like, when I'm doing like the skanks, we call them the skanks here in the biz, like there's certain accents sometimes that I'll do. There's ways to, I don't know. I like to keep them very tight, like especially these days. I like to keep them very tight, short, and like chirpy. Just like click. Like if you listen to old like Bob Marley stuff, there's barely notes coming through. It's just he's making the chord formations, but he's like just flicking, and you know, and I don't know if he goes up or I guess it depends on how fast the song is. But for me, when I'm doing reggae, it's like usually it's like downstrokes, but on beat two and four, and I'll hit it, and my fingers come off the fretboard a little bit, mm-hmm. but still muting them, you know? And so it's like real quick and short and just click, click, click. And you're still doing the chords, and you can hear remnants of the notes, right? But like, or the chords, but you're not really getting that full chord. And I think that happens to a lot of like these little reggae bands that pop up around the country. Like they're playing in a way that kind of sounds, to me, it sounds a little cheesy when you're like, bamp, 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 bamp.
Yeah.
And it's like you're not getting it. Like you're not, it's so vanilla, you know? It's like you really want to try to lock it in. And then there's like dent, dent, but dent, dent, like stuff like that. So that's what I'm saying. When like I'll do one pass on the left like this, and then I'll do the second pass on the right, and I won't hit the accents at the same time. Sometimes there'll be right before it or after or something. And so you get this sort of weird stereo thing that happens, but it ends up being pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. It doesn't, as to coin your term, it isn't as vanilla. It isn't as just kind of there. It makes your ear kind of fight for what you're listening to, but in a cool context. I think it's awesome. And I love, again, how they open up here on verse two. Verse two goes right into pre-chorus two.
All the love letters stuffed into a Molotov cocktail.
Same instrumentation, drums, bass, stereo guitars, organ. We get harmonies on both of these lines. All the love letters stuffed into a Molotov cocktail. Into chorus two.
It's hard to leave the earth to walk away.
Walk away.
Call it what it is. This is hopeless. Why can't you see it though? The life goes on.
Life goes on.
And we've seen better days. And you know this.
just can't take much more. You know we make each other miserable. Let's just call it what it is. Letting go of all of this.
Chorus two. Same placement again, all the backing vocals, all the lyrics, all the instrumentation. And I did, at this point in the song, notice, Howie, that the lyrics haven't changed in the chorus. There's a lot here, especially with the post-chorus, okay? It's not repeating the same refrain over and over again. Was there any thought of changing up a line here or there, or was there enough information here, you're thinking?
Yeah, I just felt like there's that famous Dave Grohl quote. It's like, how do you write a song? Chorus, chorus, verse, chorus, chorus, pre-chorus, chorus, you know, it's like chorus, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, it is fun to do, you know, maybe change one line on the last chorus, maybe. Like, let's say you just want to sum it up a little bit differently, saying the same thing, but sum it up a little bit differently. Or maybe that maybe you're telling a story that needs to be resolved or something. And so the last chorus, you have a little play to resolve it with some different lyrics or something to complete your story. But it's just, you're just hammering it home at this point. And I'd say, what, the chorus happens three times in the song?
Yes, yeah.
So it's I mean, that's typical Howie songwriting style, you know, just verse, pre-chorus, maybe, and then chorus, sometimes post-chorus, and then repeat, you know?
Well, and I think it worked out for you here. This is one of your most popular tracks, and, you know, especially as a younger songwriter, you kind of want to be highbrow and like, hey, I need to be more of a musician or an artist here. I'm going to change this last line. And I tell you, 20 years later, I'll look out in the front row and there's someone singing the first chorus still. They don't pick up on the last line. I'm going, oh, how'd that work out for you there, Chris?
Yeah, I'm an artist. I'm an artist. Yeah.
I'm going to change this one line up and everyone's going to love it. Not the guy right there. He didn't pick up on that line. And that's really important. I think a lot of times, and I ask that a lot on this podcast. I ask a lot of guests. I'll say, hey, you know, why did you change it up here? Or why didn't you change it up? And you get a number of answers. Right out of post-chorus two, which same harmonies on all five lines here, same lyrics. We're back to the chorus chord progression for the guitar solo. It's 16 bars. It's like an overdriven guitar right up the middle. This solo sounds to me, and not like it was just thrown together. I'm not saying it like that, or it's not memorable, but it sounds like it was just ripped, like right then. It was just kind of like, let's just go for it. That's the vibe I'm getting from it. Was this solo set in stone, or how did it happen?
So I write a lot of my solos. Like, this is why we hired a second guitar player, like a shredder, because I'm just not, there's things that I would love to do, but I could never do it. My solos are always like, they're like vocal lines that are just on a guitar, you know, mm-hmm. for the most part. And then, you know, do some cool bending here, so maybe some, you know, stuff like that here yeah. and there. But this one was just, I felt the song drives forward and I wanted the solo to do the same and just be, you know, simple and melodic. I probably did two or three passes and we just picked the best one.
I like it because it's not flashy. It's not like, here's the solo, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. It's a featured part. The band's just jamming. And sometimes that's refreshing and it fits the song. I feel it's perfect for this track.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I've never been great at soloing or, you know, I've always focused more on playing rhythm and I would do like the solos where I felt like it was needed. And it, like, as I said, it was always like melodic and in that way, vocally. This felt great for that part. And, you know, when we play it live, it's like we're getting sort of, it's the middle end of the song. So we're like, we're playing it live. And it's like, at that point, I'm like, make some fucking noise, man, or whatever. And run yeah. up to the front of the stage. I put my guitar on some girl's face. I'm just like doing this thing. It's not the best solo, but they're eating it up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no. And again, I think that this chorus progression is awesome. You could have done a million things here. You could have had a keyboard solo. You could have had whatever, but I don't think this part was like flashy, look at me, look at me. It just had to fit the song. And the band just feel like they're kind of jamming during this part. I like it. Goes right into pre-chorus three, all the love letters stuffed into a Molotov cocktail. We get that lyric again. I think we had to get that lyric again.
All the love letters stuffed into a Molotov cocktail. Oh.
We do this thing live now where it's like, it's really broken down and like there's like nothing happening except for like guitars and a vocal, and it's just very tender.
All the love letters, you ready? Stuffed into a Molotov. Everybody come on! Sometimes it's easier to walk. Come on, hey!
To me, it's like you're breaking up the madness in this storm here, and you're kind of coming back to like this soft, tender part, and just sort of reminding ourselves, you know, like, yeah, I mean, this is why we're breaking up, like, you know, and then you come in, boom, 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 you know, to last chorus.
So you break down pre-chorus three when you're doing it live. You kind of break it down just a guitar. That's interesting because coming out of this solo, listening to the track, it's like if there was any place in my mind that the song could have had a breakdown, it'd be right here. And it's funny that you're doing that live. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Drums drop out. Everybody, like, bass player stops and sort of we're throwing our hands. The other guys are throwing their hands up. I'm just covering the vocal and guitar, and you hear people singing it back to you, and it's fucking amazing. You know the feeling.
That is so cool. Well, on the last line here, stuffed into a Molotov cocktail, you let out a vocal that takes us right into chorus three and post chorus three.
Sometimes it's easier to walk away.
Walk away.
Call it what it is. This is hopeless. Why can't you see it, girl? The life goes on.
Life goes on.
We've seen better days. And you know this. Just can't take much more. You know we make each other miserable. Let's just call it what it is. Letting go of all of this.
Everything's the same here. At the very end of the song, on the last line, you swing the melody and the harmony on all. Of all of this, there's a little swing there. It's different. I love how that little thing wraps up the song for me. And then the whole band, it's like, dun, 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 dun. Then the song just abruptly ends.
It's just over.
Was there talk about doing a fade out here, or was it longer or extended, or was that always how the song was? I love how it ends.
And that's how it was. We would jam it before we tracked it. Yeah, it's just dun, 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 dun. And we're done.
I love how it ends because, and I probably wouldn't have maybe even thought of this had you not ended it like this, but if this song would have faded out or gone on and on, it feels abrupt right now, which that's sometimes a relationship has an abrupt ending. Like you just run into a wall and that's the end of it. And that's the feeling that I get from this ending. I think it's great.
Thanks. Yeah. I imagine a fade out never crossed my mind for this song. It was like, we don't really do fade outs anyway, and to me, like letting it, you know, the other option would be, you know, dun, 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 and like letting the guitars ring out and that, you know, fade those. But to me, it's like, we've already said what we need to say and we don't need to drag this out any further, much like a relationship, you know, so just boom, abrupt and done. And we're on to the next one, you know?
Right on. Well, we kind of talked about it a little bit ago, but again, now that we combed through the whole thing and we're where we're at right now, why do you think this one with the fans? What is it? When you look out and you just, it's a noticeably different vibe than some of your other stuff. You're playing it, people are going berserk. They're hanging on to every lyric. And I think it's the lyrics. I think that people can relate to the frustration that's going on here with the words.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think my dynamic, my songwriting approach has always been dark material, dark content with like uppity music, like happy music. Yeah. And it's just, that dynamic always seems to work. And this is one of those moments. Like, first off, I think we played the song too fast. I feel like we played everything way too fast up until our Girls record. Like we actually started getting our tempos right, but everything Daydreams and Back is played way too fast. Yeah, it's funny when you say those things, you go, or was it? Because it's a big song, so why should it have changed? Why should it be different? I don't know, man. I think, the lyrics really connect with people. I think the melody is really accessible and it sticks in people's head, especially the second, what you're calling the post-chorus, we just get climbing up there. It's got this cool major, I don't know what that is, a third thing happening.
Mm-hmm. The chorus is great, but the post-chorus, it just wraps up everything. And there's a lot of emotions going there. There's that tension with the bass that happens. There's the lyrical thing that you're doing, what you're saying here lyric-wise, but the music's still uplifting. So it's going with what you're saying. There's this depressing undertone, but it's still, you're still at the party.
I think there's like a feeling of people have been there. So many people have been there. They understand what I'm saying. It relates to it's pulling on their heartstrings. But there's also sort of a happy ending to it. It's like, it's a sad song, really. I've had people ask me to play this at weddings, which is odd.
You trying to doom us?
Yeah. But it ends kind of happily because it's like you're both people in the song are realizing, yes, you're right. It's not one person going, we need to break up. Oh no, stay with me. It's both people going, let's be adults. Let's realize that this isn't working and let's move on and not put ourselves through all this heart-wrenching shit. Yeah. I think people like connect with that.
Yeah, because all walking away can do is lead to new beginnings.
Exactly. I think what really made it a thing was Allie Hagendorf, who's like a star now.
Yeah, Allie's over at Spotify.
Yeah, she's killing it. True fan of music there. She's like the Matt Pinfield of this age, you know?
She really is, yeah.
Yeah, kills it. She was working over there making playlists. I think she probably still does like Rock This or something like that. But she was doing like the beach playlists, like all the feel-good stuff, Soak Up the Sun, Beach Vibes. And in 2016, I remember we were on Warped Tour and we got added, Walk Away got added to, I think, Soak Up the Sun, which is like a huge, it's even bigger now, but it was a huge playlist back then for like chill stuff or beachy stuff.
Yeah.
And we got put on there and it just really skyrocketed. And it was like another, you know, it's like a form of, it's like today's radio, you know, where you're getting introduced to new people. You know, you're just listening to a playlist at a party and the song comes on, you go, oh, what's that? And all of a sudden people are adding it to their own playlist. They're streaming it. And that's really what helped is the exposure from that playlist. And it just makes me think like, man, like there's so many great songs out there from other artists that if you could only get that exposure, get added to those playlists, that can really make a difference for you. And I know there's a lot of people that complain about, you know, Spotify and, you know, they're not paying enough and this and that, but it's like, you got to just learn how to use the platforms, man. And like, don't be so focused on the money and the numbers, just keep making stuff. When you grow your catalog, it really does start to make a difference. I promise.
Well, and the numbers, they translate into different ways. They might not be from a streaming or publishing check, but you'll see more people in the building listening to your band, singing Walk Away and buying your t-shirts, hopefully. And that's what it's all about.
That's what it's about. Yeah. You nailed it. Like I tell artists that I have my own podcast and shit and I tell people this stuff and it's like your music, you know, it's an expensive business card, really. It's like, you know, it's like you're using your music to get people to come to the shows and build community and you know, get them to buy t-shirts and things like that. You have to build community now. It's not about being on the radio anymore and being some huge rock star. It's about like connecting with community and building that. Things are so flat now and saturated. Everyone can be on Spotify and YouTube and everything. So you've got a couple, you've got, you know, but Beyonce, you're talking 20 years, you know, 25 years in her career. You're not going to have like that anymore as much. You may have one or two like huge stars, but like, it's not going to be like it used to be. And so you have to just be happy creating your own community and digging out your own spot in this music industry and building that. And don't worry about the other band that's selling 20,000 tickets and you're selling 100, you know, just build.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Howie, I appreciate you sitting in and taking time out of your day. And what's going on with the band? What do you guys got coming up?
First off, thanks for having me. Fucking love you.
Love you too.
And dude, you guys are so awesome. Like, Les and Jake is awesome. And I remember we did an acoustic tour and it was like watching a stand-up comedy act. And it was so awesome. It was like, nobody can do that shit like you can do it. I just love that. And thank I you. Want to tell all your listeners out there, fastest restringer of guitars ever, right here, that I'm talking to. You should feel honored.
Oh yeah, I strung your acoustic guitar. That's
you,
right.
You saw me doing it. I was all sick. I remember I got all sick. This is right before COVID was a thing, right?
We were in Vegas.
We were in Vegas, and I'm like, you saw me stringing up my guitar. Like, hey man, let me show you something. I'm like, you're like, get the fuck out of the way. And like, you grab the thing, and you're like, all right. You strung the entire guitar probably in like 60 seconds.
I forgot about that.
Dude, I've never, like, I always thought I was fast. I was like pretty good at string guitars, you know, but like you came in and you showed me this little thing and it's like, oh my God. Like, it was the fastest I've ever strung guitar or I've ever seen a guitar.
Well, I got to give credit where credit's due. I learned that from Roger. Roger's the master. So he taught me anything I know guitar tech wise. So kudos to Roger. But yeah, I remember that night you were sicker than a dog. And that was late January of 2020. So it was right before the whole COVID thing. We were on an acoustic tour, Howie and I, with Jason DeVore from Authority Zero and a couple other guys. That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun, man. It would have been a lot more fun if I wasn't sick. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, did I have COVID? Like, nobody else got sick as far as I know. But we were in a van together, like very close quarters, you know?
Yeah. There was like eight of us driving in that thing.
So stupid. Yeah. All right. The Ballyhoo's we got a new record coming out August 25th. It's called Shell Shock. 14 tracks. We've been dropping singles over the last 5 months or so. Drunk Texter just came out with our friend Hyrie. She did a verse and sang some of the chorus with me. And it's been a lot of fun. I can't wait for people to hear it.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, again, thank you a million times. Thanks for sitting in. It's great to see you as usual.
Dude, great to see you, man. Thanks so much for having me. Your podcast is awesome. I've listened to it a bit here and there, like the Huey Lewis one a while back. I think last year, the year before I caught that.
Thank you.
And then like just the one with Feldman a couple weeks ago was so good. So it's definitely, you're doing great things here, man. Thank you for doing
Thanks.
This.
Thanks. Well, hey, speaking of, before we go, plug your podcast. What is it?
Oh, it's called Tales from the Green Room. And it's just, I just base it around my experience in the music industry, about, you know, just the last 28 years. What year is it now? 28 years of being in a band. And we've seen like every form of the record industry and touring. Yeah. And just, so I try to give advice and just tell my stories and make people learn stuff. If anything, entertain them.
Very cool. All right, man.
Thanks a lot, dude.
The song you're hearing right now is Drunk Texter from Ballyhoo's new album Shell Shock, which comes out on August 25th, 2023. Howie, if you're still listening, this song is awesome, man. Everybody else, hey, don't go anywhere. We got lots more Chris to Make's a podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020'd? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020'd, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020'd.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is McCrackens, a four-piece punk rock band from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. These guys have been rocking since 1994. In fact, Les than Jake was on several comps with them back in the day. Their new album is called Wake the Fun Up. Here's a snippet of their song, Up to 11.
Turn it up to 11, 'cause I want. Turn it up to 11, I love it loud, like
with Chris and Chris.
Chris, I love when Krista Makes a Podcast exposes me to a new favorite band. Somehow, even though they've been a band for close to 30 years, Ballyhoo slipped under my radar. And it wasn't until like the past year or two that I discovered them. And I think they're so freaking good. This song is so good.
They're great. They're great dudes. Great band. I'm not taking anything away from their former bass player who played on this track, Walk Away, or any other previous members. But the band they got now is slamming. We just did that 311 cruise with them, and they're better than they've ever been. Awesome band.
That's awesome. I look forward to seeing them. I loved one of the funniest things, and I know I have a few friends that are going to think this is funny too. I love that someone who plays in a band that plays reggae music cited Adam Sandler's Piece of Shit Car as an inspiration or like one of the early reggae songs they heard. It's so awesome.
Yeah, that came out of left field right there. I thought that was great too.
I'm guessing I'm around the same age as Howie, so I really related to his journey to punk rock, and then which led to ska and reggae, very similar to mine, you know, Green Day to Goldfinger to Sublime. It's just, you know, I'm sure that there's a lot of people listening who also had that same, you know, we all had to be exposed to this music one way or another. We all didn't have some cool older sibling who was really into music to show it to us. So for a lot of us, yeah, it was the radio. It was MTV that opened the door to a whole new world of music.
Sure. And, you know, I think Howie's very respectful of the reggae culture. You know, when he gets called reggae rock or this and that, he always says, I think, what do you call it? We're Maryland Beach vibes or something, you
beach
know?
Rock, and yeah.
Beach rock. Yeah, Maryland Beach rock. And I think why it's kind of like when people call my band a ska band, you know, the forefathers of ska, I never want to disrespect them, you know, Desmond Dekker, the guys that came, you know, the originals, you know, and say, I'm a ska band and put my brand on that. I think kind of that's what he's saying here. He's, you know, and I've always have thought of them more as a rock band with reggae influences.
Sure. And I get that. And when I say, if I call Less Than Jake a ska band, or if I call Ballyhoo a reggae band, it's more just because of the musical, like the upstrokes and the musical style. And I realize, like, yeah, you don't want to, I don't know, take credit. Is that the right way to put it for something like that? But definitely it's an influence on the band. So even if, you know, I think of Less Than Jake as more of a punk rock band. And yeah, Ballyhoo, if they're a beach rock band, I get that. But, you know, it's inevitable that people are going to call you guys a ska band and them a reggae band. Like, that's just,
oh,
people
yeah,
like to put things big blanket terms, you know?
Yeah, you have to be able to describe someone's music to somebody. So that's how that typically happens. But yeah, I've always thought of them as a rock band with those reggae vibes. And they're just, as I said, the band is better now, I think, than they've ever been.
Yeah, and you know how I said that Ballyhoo kind of slipped under my radar for a long time? Well, he kind of talked about that sometimes the appeal to a band like that has a cult following is that they're not on the radio. You know, and then all of a sudden, thousands of people are at the shows or whatever. And hey, I totally know all about that. Believe me, I grew up as a teenager in the 90s liking punk rock music. I get what the appeal of something not being mainstream is. And hey, I still get why that is still appealing today. You know, maybe I'm a little less, I don't know, snobby about it, but I still understand why you feel more ownership of it, or more like it's yours and not just everybody's or something. There's something cool about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen tons of bands make a career out of just that. You know, they NoFX is a great example. They could have signed to majors a number of times in their career, and they always kept it on their own terms, and the fans still come out in droves. Most of their fans would probably tell you they're glad they weren't on the radio.
Yeah, I'm sure NoFX doesn't even want to be on the radio. I'm sure they absolutely do not want to be on the radio.
They don't need to, yeah. They don't need to be.
When it comes to this song, there are a few cool things I want to talk to you about when he said about this song. First of all, there's been a couple other people that said stuff like this, Chris, but he said when the idea came into his head, he didn't even need to try to remember it. It just stayed there in his head. Is that the sign of a great song? You don't even need that voice memo. You might do the voice memo anyway.
I've always said that. I've always said it, you know, especially back in the day when I didn't have a voice recorder in my pocket, I didn't have access to a studio. It's like, if I wrote something that was memorable, I knew it, you know. Now I'll always put it on the voice memo, but I'll still know that it was memorable and great if I go to open up the voice memo and I say to myself, I don't need to listen to that. And I just pick the guitar and just start playing it. So, you know, when something is ingrained like that, you know it's good.
If that's doing it to you now, imagine what it's going to do to people later once they hear it.
Yeah.
I mean, it totally makes sense. Another thing that I totally related to, I'm sure a lot of people will relate to, is that feeling when you're young. When you're a younger person, everything matters, and you don't realize that you're going to meet so many people throughout your life. You don't realize how many things don't matter because they feel like the end of the world. I know with doing that Punchline podcast, recollecting all these old memories, I talked to all my bandmates like, I think I've said this to you before, but we're doing these tours. We're a full-time touring band, and we have girlfriends back home, none of which any of us ever talk to now or anything. But to us then, it's like we should have just been out there living life, meeting people, but we're all concerned about, oh, my girlfriend back home having these fights and everybody's jealous and all this kind of stuff. But when you get older, you have such a more mature way of looking at things. And even in this song, Chris, Howie had such a mature outlook in these lyrics. Instead of writing a song where he's blaming the other person, you did this, you did that, it's your fault. It's more like, hey, we're both part of this equation. This relationship is toxic from both sides. Not one person is responsible.
Yeah, he was shouldering half the blame, which is kind of cool from a songwriting standpoint.
Yeah, I thought this was a great one, man.
I'll tell you what else is great, Chris, which we hammer every week, and we will continue to do so. So,
hey, let me say something about it. I want to say something about it real quick. I want to really get down to brass tacks about this. The After Party Podcast. Chris, do you know that we've been doing the After Party Podcast for like over 2 years now every week? Like, that podcast is its own thing. And, you know, we go over a lot of music history, a lot of our opinions on music, a lot of other fun stuff. And, you know, it's a couple bucks a month. And if you love this podcast, if you love what we're doing, that is one of the most direct ways you can support it and allow us to continue doing this.
That's right.
So, you know, ChrisDeMakes.com if you're interested.
That's right. ChrisDeMakes.com. You'll be supporting the podcast that we hope you know and love. Give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. I'm still doing those custom songs. Hit me up, ChrisDeMakes@gmail.com. I'll give you all the info. If you'd like a custom song written for you with that special someone or for your business, hit me up, ChrisDeMakes@gmail.com. And you know what? I'm going to hammer this too, Chris. Give Chris Fafalius, my trusted podcast partner and producer, a follow on Instagram too, @ChrisFafalius.
Hey, I've been getting a few more since you've been saying that. I've been getting a few more followers. I have. I've been paying attention.
If you broke 10,000 followers, that's when you get to do extra stuff. I don't know what.
Oh, no. I have like 7,400.
Well, we need to bump that up.
Which is awesome.
Chris Fafalius.
Come on. Get me that 10K. What's the special stuff I can do when I hit 10K? I didn't really know about it.
You can like tag other people. I don't know. I can't remember what the perks are. Okay. There's some special perk. But yeah, give Chris a follow. Wow. And want to thank this week's guest, Howie Spangler, for sitting in the hot seat with us. We'll see you next week.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. from Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.